Good afternoon. So, what does the Bible say about gambling? And is gambling a safe bet? You know, a couple weeks ago, the Supreme Court struck down a federal law that prohibited sports gambling. States now have the right to legalize betting on sports. Didn't used to be the case. And so we have yet another venue for the American public to bet on. Legal or not, how should a Christian respond, and what would Jesus do? Is this a part of our separation from the world? Or is it just, as the gaming industry now says, just harmless entertainment? I mentioned this morning how much I respect Abraham Lincoln. I have a book of his sayings. He was a really wise person. He was in an argument with somebody one time. Remember, he was a lawyer by profession. And he said, if you have a goat, and the goat has four legs and a tail, but you call the leg, you call the goat's tail a leg, how many legs does the goat now have? And the other person said, well, five. He goes, no, still has four legs. He just has a tail. You call it a leg. Just calling something different doesn't change the truth of what it really is. So in this whole subject of morality, we have to be really careful about euphemisms and people just changing a name to make it look better or sound better. And so I'm going to talk tonight about gambling, not about gaming, even though they've recently changed the term. Talk about the gaming industry today, not the gambling industry, because it takes away some of the stigma that people have with gambling. It's now considered respectable. You know, everybody's doing it. It's more and more legal. I mean, is it really just harmless entertainment? How do you define gambling? Well, something of value to be gained or lost is placed deliberately in hazard. Secondly, winning is determined by some arbitrary event of chance or uncertainty not inherent to the wager. And thirdly, profits come at the loss of other participants without whom there is no gamble. So there's some people who think, well, how does this fit with the golden rule? Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. You know, what this person is going to wind up losing in this poker game. You know, is this a situation where I'm causing someone's loss when I wouldn't want that to happen to me? Anyway, the question is it wrong? Now, as I mentioned earlier, when we talk about moral issues, we have to be really careful not to be making man-made rules. Remember, Jesus spoke really more harshly about the Pharisees who made up a bunch of man-made rules and talked about them as if they were doctrines of God, more so than even the Sadducees who were more liberal in nature and were loosing where God hasn't loosed. We don't want to do either one. We don't want to bind where God hasn't bound or loose where God hasn't loosed. And so instead of just setting up some blanket rule, thou shalt not gamble, since you can't find a verse that says that, Old or New Testament, which in some ways kind of surprises me, what we have to do is look at Bible principles. Now, keep in mind, there's not a verse anywhere that I know of that says thou shalt not become a terrorist and commit terrorist acts. But obviously, just because you can't find a verse that specifically prohibits that, doesn't mean in any way, shape, or form that you could ever defend terrorism. And there's so many moral issues that are like that. And so this clearly is one. As you know, since we are striving to restore New Testament Christianity, one of the things I always like to do is look and see what the early Christians said about this. You know, what kind of insights can we have from them? The early Christians saw playing dice, gambling, as a part of worldliness. And Tertullian said in 210 AD, which is sort of typical, I could probably give you 20 quotes from early Christians. They were all the same. They all said things like this. If you say you are a Christian and you are a dice player, you say what you are not because you are a partner with the world. Now, that's not inspired, but I think it's instructive. It's interesting to see. If we went back into a time machine and started living among the early Christians, playing dice, gambling was not acceptable in the early church. Okay. We have a serious problem today with gambling. There are 72 million gamblers estimated in the United States, and it's estimated that they gambled, had a gross use of $511 billion, and particularly now with all the online gambling, it is growing exponentially. U.S. consumers in 2013, the latest statistic I could find, lost $119 billion in their gambling, had that many debts. And what I find particularly troublesome is that people who play the lottery, most of the time, that's poor people. This is a tax on the poor in many ways. And $119 billion in losses in mostly the lowest socioeconomic classes is just an outrage to me. But that's what the facts show. And the people that can least afford to play the lottery and to gamble are the ones who do it, oftentimes because they're trying to figure out some way to pay their rent, which typically doesn't work out too well, as you might well expect. 2.6% of the U.S. population, that's about 10 million people, are what's described as compulsive gamblers. Now, this is where they have lost control, they can't stop, and they wind up in financial ruin. 50% of these people start committing crimes or felonies in order to feed their habit. And it is a major issue in the breakdown of families. And I'm sad to say that a very large percentage of these 10 million people wind up being suicidal or wind up committing suicide. And the increase in compulsive gamblers is one of the reasons for the increased suicide rate in this country. There are 750,000 young people, people between 20 and 30 years old, that have issues with gambling. And so much of that has come because of the ease of online gambling. I have, some of my family counseling, found that frequently, usually the male is into online poker or something like that, and run up the credit cards and is causing issues with their family and trust between the husband and the wife. And it was really sad. I remember one couple in particular who wound up getting divorced over this very issue. The wife was furious, kind of brought me in, and I talked to this young man. I thought he was very serious about quitting. But this is an extremely difficult thing to stop once you become addicted to it, once you get hooked. And that was the case here. And it's very sad because the wife started enabling him to go and do his online poker games because he was pretty good at it and he was winning. And as long as he was winning, she suddenly was fine with it. Of course, he stopped winning and then she wasn't fine with it anymore. And then they brought me in and they'd been lying to me, both of them, for months. Just so sad to see the deceit and the lying that happened just so they could continue to play online poker. Did you know that Americans gamble away more money in a given year than they spend on groceries? I mean, that's how big a number this is in regards to it being a problem. And everybody talks about the homeless problem. And of course, it's a huge problem here in Seattle. One out of every five homeless become homeless due to gambling. Wow. So wouldn't it be nice if we looked at some of the root causes of homelessness? One of the problems is a society that constantly pushes and encourages gambling and oftentimes with devastating results. So what I want us to do is to look at some biblical principles that apply to this, since there's not a specific prohibition. And then I want to make some applications, and I want to bend over backwards to be fair about this. You know, I had an elder in a church that I worked with for many years, and he used to say, extremists don't have to think. They just sort of make some sort of extreme law, and they don't have to try to discern anything. And so, you know, we don't want to be extreme right or left wingers. We just want to try to look at principles and show wisdom and try to think through these things. All right. One of the principles, of course, that comes into mind is covetousness. And I put in gambling in my online little section there where you look for online pictures based on a description. And so many of them had to do with people just going like this, a greedy desire for money. That was interesting. I was looking for just pictures about gambling, and I had all these images of people being greedy. The Bible warns us in Luke 12 and verse 15 to beware of covetousness. And in 1 Corinthians 6, we're told specifically, be not deceived, for idolaters will not enter the kingdom of heaven. And the Bible says that covetousness is a form of idolatry. Ephesians 5 and verse 5, for this you know with certainty that no immoral or impure person or covetous man who is an idolater has an inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and God. You know, I've been preaching for over 40 years now, and I have never heard of anybody being withdrawn from for being covetous. In fact, I've never had anybody in my life ever confess to being covetous. Yet apparently it was a problem that they had in the early church, and people often had to come clean about their being covetous. Isn't that interesting? It's kind of one of those things that, I know we talk about it, but it just fascinates me that, I mean, how would you withdraw fellowship from somebody for being covetous? And yet that was one of the reasons they said they withdrew fellowship from people in the New Testament. So I just think sometimes we need to look into our heart and ask, hey, am I sometimes covetous? Colossians 3, 5 and 6, therefore put to death your members which are on the earth, fornication, uncleanliness, passion, evil desires, and covetousness, which is idolatry. So not all, but I think we need to see that some people are just greedy for something that's kind of a get-rich-quick opportunity, and what's driving that oftentimes is covetousness. And if that's so, then obviously in that case, gambling would be wrong. I also think deceit has a lot to do with this whole subject. Deceit has to do with treachery or trickery and dishonesty. Proverbs chapter 12 and verse 20 says, deceit is in the heart of him that devises evil. When you drive to places like Nevada and you're near Las Vegas, you see all of these signs about these excited people playing in these casinos and all these pictures of these jackpot winners. And they just look like, wow, you know, now they're set for life. And I've often wondered, how can they give away these large amounts in these jackpots and still be one of the most lucrative things you can do is to own a casino? Because you stack the odds against the people that are playing, and people who do it know the odds are stacked against them, but they do it anyway. Well, did you know that 90% of jackpot winners think, oh, this is my lucky day? And so they take the money they just won on the jackpot and they give it back to the casino. They just gamble that away. Again, I'm not recommending people go to casinos, but if you ever hit the jackpot, please walk away. Put the money in the bank. What a stupid thing to go back and gamble some more. But that's the problem, because a lot of what's involved in gambling is not just this idea of, you know, getting rich quick. The former director of gaming enforcement for the state of New Jersey told a conference that the success of Atlantic City was tied to how well it sold its only products. He explained that product is not entertainment or recreation or leisure, as you might expect. It's really adrenaline, a biological substance capable of producing excitement and highs generated usually by anticipation or expectation of a future event, especially when the outcome of that event is in doubt. According to the chief regulator of the industry, gaming, or gambling, is not only a drug, but can be a mind-altering drug. One author actually called it a controlled substance. In fact, there is evidence that pathological gaming is an addiction similar to chemical addiction. Winning at gambling has been compared neurologically to a cocaine addict receiving an infusion of a drug. So the people get hooked and they get this high from having this big winning, then if it's really not so much oftentimes about the money, but about the high, then that explains maybe why they turn around, take their winnings, and just give it right back. Kind of foolish. But this idea that this is some, you know, ticket to easy street, in my judgment, is the essence of deceit. Mark chapter 7, 21 through 23. From within, out of the heart of men, proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, murders, thieves, covetousness, wickedness, deceit, lewdness, an evil eye, blasphemy, pride, and foolishness. There are so many passages that warn about people being deceived and being spoiled through deceit. And a lot of times, gambling is just some sort of get-rich-quick scheme. Proverbs 28, verse 19, those who work their land will have abundant food, but those who chase fantasies will have their fill of poverty. A while back, I couldn't believe why 7-Eleven was just so busy. And there's this long line. I go, what's going on here? And it was one of these big jackpots that had gone up and up and up, and everybody was all excited. Are you going to buy a lottery ticket? I said, nope. So why not? I go, I'm not that stupid. What? I go, do you realize your chance of winning the lottery is less than you're going outside and being hit by lightning? Why would you throw your money away at this? Anyway, the whole thing to me, this excitement that causes, is just bizarre. And the other thing that's bizarre to me is if you've ever read what happens to these lottery winners, most of the time their life is ruined. They have arguments, they have divorces. In one case, one spouse murdered the other so they could get their share. I mean, they quit their jobs. It's just unbelievable how it leads to this downward spiral. The love of money indeed is the root of all kinds of evil. Industriousness is an important principle. God has ordained each citizen to be industrious, engaged in some form of occupation to sustain himself or his family. For example, the scriptures indicate three legitimate means of providing a livelihood: wages for labor, the exchange of things of value, the buying and selling investments, and giving and receiving gifts or inheritance. You can find verses where these things are affirmed and talked about, both Old and New Testament. Let's look at some of these verses. Wages for labor, Acts 20, 33 and following. And everything I showed you that by working hard in this manner, you must help the weak. 1 Thessalonians 3, for you remember, brethren, our labor and toil when we were among you. Remember, Paul was a tent maker. 1 Thessalonians 4:11, that you also aspire to lead a quiet life, to mind your own business, and to work with your own hands as we have commanded you. So that's an honorable thing, honest day's work, and to receive an honest wage in return. Then there's the exchange of things of value, the buying and selling of investments. Matthew 25, verse 27, so you ought to have deposited my money with the bankers, and at my coming, at least I would have received back my own interest. You work hard for your money. If you have something left over, to put that in savings and earn some interest so your money works for you, well, that's a good, reasonable thing. James 4 and verse 13, come now, you who say today or tomorrow, we will go to such and such a city, spend a year there, buy and sell, and make a profit. Some people say that, well, the stock market's kind of a big gamble, and so, you know, I guess everybody's a gambler, that kind of thing. Investment risk, if it's a calculated risk, is not the same as gambling. It's just not. So There's also the giving and receiving of gifts. Ephesians 4, verse 28, let him labor, working with his hands what is good, that he may have something to give to him who has need. Acts 2, 44 and 45, now all who believed were together, had all things in common, and divided them among all as anyone had need. These are voluntary love offerings that were given. And the church, of course, is to take care of widows that are in need as well. But when you think about it, wages for labor, the exchange of things of value, maybe you buy a house and then later you sell it because it's appreciated and you make a profit, good for you. Giving and receiving gifts, yeah, that's a positive thing. But gambling is none of these things. And therefore, people have argued that if you're looking for some sort of affirmation for gambling, there isn't any in Scripture. And therefore, people would argue that this method of trying to provide for your family or make income is not authorized. Another biblical principle is self-control, mastery over desire. Gambling can be addictive, someone says, so why start? Now, I do think we need to be, again, fair here. Cell phone use can be addictive. But that doesn't mean that it's wrong to have a cell phone. So just because something can be doesn't inherently make it wrong, but it seems to me there are certain things it's just best not to venture into as a matter of wisdom, not as a matter of inherently right or wrong. Notice what it says here in 2 Peter 1, 5 through 7. Add to your faith virtue, to virtue knowledge, to knowledge self-control. 1 Corinthians 6, 12. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be brought under the power of any. And wow, a compulsive gambler has just totally lost control, and it often leads them to financial ruin. It seems to me that gambling is opposed to the idea of contentment. We're supposed to, with godliness and contentment, learn that there is great gain rather than chasing the latest Powerball jackpot. And then there's the principle of stewardship, management of property. I alluded a minute ago to, you know, how many people wind up, you know, taking money that didn't belong to them or taking their own money that does and misusing it, and how if that's happening, then that certainly is unwise. The prodigal son wasted his blessing, and now, not many days after, the younger son gathered all together and took his journey into a far country, and there wasted his substance with riotous living. How many people have wasted their life savings in gambling? In 1 Corinthians 4 and verse 2, moreover, it is required in stewards that a man be found faithful. So, if someone's not being a good steward, then that obviously would violate this principle of stewardship. And then, of course, we have the works of the flesh. Those who participate in such will not inherit the kingdom of God. And notice, jealousies, selfish ambitions, envy, idolatry, all of those things very well could be involved in somebody who is just really attracted to gambling. Idolatry is a Greek word here that connotes the idea of avarice, as in the worship of mammon. Jealousies has to do with pursuing and defending anything, the fierceness of indignation, contentious rivalry, that is being condemned. Selfish ambitions, a desire to put oneself forward, a partisan, a fractious spirit, which does not disdain. Low arts, ambition, self-seeking, rivalry, self-will, etc. Envy is the desire to deprive another of what he has. And of course, that one especially, I think, could very well relate to motives associated with gambling. So that, of course, needs to be thought through. So, gambling often is contrary to these teachings. We need to be content. We need to be selfless. We need to be honest, industrious. We need to be self-controlled. Be careful of our influence. Be good stewards. And, of course, focus on spirituality. And if somebody who's practicing in these things, if it violates these divine principles, then that would make it wrong. So, somebody asked, well, what about moderation? is this a matter of principle or a matter of proportion? Years ago, there was an elder in a congregation where I used to preach. I respected the man. He was certainly somebody who was very moral and very conservative. And he said, I periodically will flip a coin to see who's going to buy lunch with somebody that I frequently have lunch with. And it's a fun little banter. And, you know, sometimes I buy his lunch and sometimes he buys mine, usually maybe $7 or $8. Are you telling me I'm violating all of those principles by flipping a coin to see who's going to pay for lunch? And I had a thought about that. I mean, I was taught not to do that kind of thing. But honestly, I think that was more of a hedge. It's more of a just stay away from it because it's probably not wise, rather than being an inherent sinful activity. Is playing poker for fun with pennies a problem? You know, I remember when I was on vacation one time and I was shocked when we were in the back of this camper while we had a long drive to go to Montana, and my dad says, son, you want to play some poker? What? He goes, yeah, we got some Monopoly money here. It's kind of fun. And so he taught me how to play poker with Monopoly money. Very unusual for my father to do something like that. And then we talked later about the fact that it was just a game and you never want to do that with real stakes or real money. So was that a sinful thing for my dad to play with my sister and I in the backseat of it, or in the camper? I don't know, matter of judgment. Well, pennies, I mean, that could add up, right? Again, I think it's a matter of judgment. Is spending a limited amount of recreation money on a game wrong? Well, we all have certain things we do for recreation that we find is fun. So somebody spends some money on a game and they wind up losing something in the game, small amount of money. Is there a gray area here? Well, I think it's best probably to stay away from that stuff. I didn't ever play poker with my kids. I just felt uncomfortable with it, even with Monopoly money. But the point is, I think we need to leave some area for, you know, personal discretion. Somebody says, well, what about 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 22, which says, flee the appearance of evil? Let's just get this laid out real quick. That verse does not mean if something appears to be evil but is not, you need to stay away from it. The verse means that as soon as evil appears, run, stay away from it. That's what the other translations say other than the King James. So as soon as you realize something is wrong, abstain from it. However, you do have the principle of Romans 14, verse 16, which says, let not your good be evil spoken of. And Romans 12, verse 17, which says, let your behavior be honest in the sight of all men. So there's an influence factor here. William Bennett was, I think, one of the cabinet members in the Reagan administration. And he wrote a book that was really good. I recommend it to you. I've read a bunch of these stories to my children. It's called The Book of Virtues. There's all these different virtues that he talked about and all these neat stories that impact people and teach good character. But he didn't have any stories in the Book of Virtues about not gambling. And it turns out William Bennett is a big gambler. And there's a bunch of news articles about him going to Atlantic City and placing these big bets, and people were shocked because this is the guy who's teaching the nation's kids how to be virtuous. And he defended what he did. Even though they were large amounts of money, hundreds of thousands of dollars, he said he never bet money that he couldn't afford to lose, and it's just something he wanted to do, and it happened to be an expensive hobby, but other people have expensive hobbies, etc. The world labeled William Bennett the bookie of virtue. Now, the amounts of money we're talking about were not moderate. So I think he was just rationalizing. But it was unwise for him and certainly hurt his reputation and his influence. And he'd said a lot of really good things because, in my judgment, he had this gambling vice. So, you know, do Christians need to be careful about doing something that others may view as inappropriate with our Christian walk? Yes, we do. Even if you might argue that you don't think it's inherently wrong. What about social gambling? You know, kind of the pressure to go along, some office party or something. Well, one of the things I've noticed with casinos, even sometimes when you go on cruise ships and there's, you know, area where people are gambling when you're out on the big open international waters, it's disturbing to me what seems to always go along with the atmosphere of a casino or gambling. You usually have women who are there in immodest clothes, doing the cards. You almost always have a lot of drinking. Casinos like that because it causes people to lower their inhibitions, which makes them more likely to lose money. Even though people don't tend to want to smoke very much, there's usually smoke going up. And there's just so many things about the whole environment that I just see as something that I choose to abstain from. Even if someone wants to argue, well, I just take a certain amount of money and it's just for fun and I go there and then I stop. There's just broader implications, I think, than just that one aspect. When I was at a church in San Diego, a lot of the members would say, we're going to Vegas and we're going to gamble and, you know, we hope we'll win. I just had never been in a church where people were so open about their gambling. You know, I found that disturbing. And we'll just argue that based on influence. What's next? Put it in the bulletin, pray for them to have a successful time and come back with a lot of winnings? Any rate, 1 Peter 4:3-4, for the time already past is sufficient for you to have carried out the desire of the Gentiles, having pursued a course of sensuality, lust, drunkenness, carousing, drinking parties, abominable idolatries, and all this they are surprised that you do not run with them in the same excesses of dissipation, and they malign you. So again, if you were running with this crowd who did this kind of thing, part of being a Christian is you absent yourself from these kind of parties and these kind of get-togethers. Well, what about worthy causes? I mean, you got charity raffles and you got the lottery. They argue that it increases proceeds to go to education. You got religious organizations and they have fundraisers for good causes. And again, everybody needs to make their own discernment about these things, but let's keep in mind that good ends does not justify the means. Romans 3 and verse 8 says very clearly that we should not do evil that good may come. So if it's wrong, even if it's, quote, for a good cause, you know, it's best just to stay away from it. What about playing games without wagering? Well, 1 Peter 4 and verse 8 talks about that, you know, godliness is profitable, having the promise of life that now is and of that which is to come. So we want to focus on our godliness, but we need to remember that the gamble is not the game itself. I'm one who likes board games at times. And so if you are just engaging in a game without having any kind of a wager, kind of like a poker game with Monopoly money, I don't think it fits the definition of what we're talking about as gambling. And I think that's where my dad was coming from. Someone says, but all of life is a gamble. Well, I mean, you get in your car, you go outside, it's a gamble, you may get hit by another car. That's true. But that doesn't mean that this kind of gambling that we're talking about here is a wise thing or a right thing. There's a difference between a calculated risk, like you make an investment in a company, and gambling. And you can take a chance without gambling, but you cannot gamble without taking a chance. So we need to think about these things and have discernment. What the Bible calls us to, of course, is a godly life. Things that are honest and just and pure and lovely and of good report. If there be any virtuous, if there anything worthy of praise, think on these things. Gambling doesn't qualify generally with any of these things that we're supposed to dwell on and think about as we try to be the light of the world. So, those are some thoughts for you to think about. And whether you think gambling is a safe bet or not, these are principles that need to be considered. So, we're now to the call of the gospel. We're told to believe. Without faith, it is impossible to please him. Repent, therefore, and be converted, that your sins may be blotted out. If you confess with your mouth that Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God has raised him from the dead, thou shalt be saved. And then ultimately, we're told, and now why tarriest thou? Arise and be baptized and wash away thy sins, calling on the name of the Lord. You know, there's no chance involved in coming to the Lord. I mean, if you do, you have these promises you can count on. And if anybody needs to count on those promises, won't you come as together we stand and we sing.